It is 2:59 here on September 19th, and despite what several people have said, it is still summertime, at least here. It's 68 degrees, the sky is blue, and it's beautiful. It's always beautiful here in the Lower Columbia or Columbia Pacific region. This is Carol. I'll be your host for Arts Live and Local. Well, for some it's a disappointment. For other, it's a relief. Here's some music from Scotland. Thanks for being here, folks. Good luck to Scotland and the UK. I hope they're able to figure out a way to make everyone feel valued and make the whole thing work without violence. What a concept. Yes. Well, that's what we do here week after week, and that's what we do in this region just about every day because we are very much involved in arts and culture. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the way to peace in our world. My first guest tells an amazing story. Bruce Holbert has been here before, actually, with his first book, Lonesome Animals. And let me welcome Bruce. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
You
bet. I appreciate it.
Now, when was it that you came out with Lonesome Animals?
Lonesome Animals came out in 2012, and I think that I think I was here for the paperback tour, which would have been last year around this time.
Oh, okay. And so did your new book just come out, The Hour of Lead?
Or came out in July.
In July. Well, yeah. that's just, mm-hmm. Yes, okay. The book is The Hour of Lead, and I'm going to let Bruce explain most of this to you because I was overwhelmed by the book, and I'm not the only person. I was glad to see this, that Kirkus Reviews praised the book as a masterpiece, and I would thoroughly agree. They wrote, rings out with the hard, clean truths of love, loyalty, and family, and the fierce longing and ever-present pain of human existence. So you can see it runs the gamut, and I couldn't put the book down. On the other hand, it was a little bit daunting to begin, because you start right off. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
The book starts with a snowstorm, and in the snowstorm, the main character's father and brother, twin brother, die, and he ends up through a sort of crazy happenstance with his school teacher in an intimate situation. He's probably 14 at the time. And
the year is 1918.
The year is 1918. Yeah, and it starts to unravel for the characters from there. Matt, who's the main character, takes on, you know, the role of manhood in his family, takes care of his mom, who's distraught and really never returns to normal. And, you know, physically he can do it, but emotionally he's got no template.
Speaking of templates, two things. First of all, living here on the coast, immediately there was an identification because we have many people who have lost families, and often, not often, but many times it is multiple generations. Mm-hmm. On the sea, in the sea, mm-hmm. fishing.
Sure.
We have a lot mm-hmm. of that. And so that deep, deep loss and tragedy and the changes. I was wondering, though, where did this come for you? You were born and brought up in Eastern Washington?
Yeah, I was born and brought up on, my dad worked construction. And so for the first 6 or 7 years of my life, we just followed the work. Uh-huh. And we had a trailer, and we just, I lived in, I think, 23 different towns before I went to grade school. And
wow.
That sounds like, it sounds like an awful life, but it wasn't. It was really
fun. Yeah. Being a nomad,
And once I was school age, then I was the oldest of my siblings. Once I was school age, we settled down in Grand Coulee, which was both his home and my mom's, and that was kind of home base, and I started school there.
And did you actually end up staying there for a longish period?
Well, yeah, it seems the world's made of circles. Mm. And it was always what we circled back to. Both my sets of grandparents were there. My mom's parents came out during the Depression to work on the dam, and my dad's family actually founded much of the country and pioneered it. Mm. So they've got pretty deep roots. And my dad and my mom split up. My mom left, but we would always go back in the summer, and then. When I was 15, I moved back in with my dad, and so I went throughout high school. I went to school in Grand Coulee.
So you have, that comes so much comes up and through. Just you're mentioning circle life, circling. This was at one point. I thought, oh my God, this is like a Russian novel with all the names. I actually wrote down. I mean, I've got a couple of triangles like Matt and Roland and Jarms, and another one was Mrs. Lawson and Wendy and Linda. And then, of course, there was the baby, and then there was Lucky. I mean, it was all of these characters, but they're not independent of one another. I marvel at your ability to bring this together in a thoroughly grounded and real sense. And it's are you a mathematician or something? I mean, how you bring this all together, and who are these people? So you know the countryside, but how do you know these people? Because this is
first I can't imagine being farther from a mathematician. My son is an astrophysics major, and I completely admire him, but I don't understand a lot of what he says. He's got a book, and it doesn't have words in it. It's just got problems. The process I write through is really pretty organic. I don't make many plans, and I try to let things happen and let them occur naturally. So a lot of times I'll just follow my nose and see where it ends up. And in this book particularly, I found ways back to other parts of the story. So I might follow the characters, you know, follow a character on a side trip, and then all of a sudden I would realize that what he's doing on this trip thematically hinges with what's going on this other side. The middle of the book, there's two sort of parallel stories, and they kind of play off each other. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the nice things of them just occurring naturally, that I would go from one chapter to, you know, another chapter with other characters. And I think the fact that first chapter was already in place made the next chapter, mm-hmm. you know, my mind was still on that stuff. And so there were, you know, it was a kind of natural transition.
Did you study the history of the time, though? Because I'm not sure. Would you say, I mean, this is very Western, and it's like the Wild West in some ways. There are some scenes in here that are definitely, you know, the guy walking in the saloon door kind of thing.
And yet it is,
as I say, very... I must be saying something magical because the sirens are going. See, it's your book that's
barking.
Doing it. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I wonder if there's a particular passage in here or page that you would be willing to read for us.
Sure.
That would be, perhaps people can get, because your language is so rich. We were talking about, said this would make an amazing movie, especially for those who don't read. On the other hand, I would not want to miss this book. It's so rich in every way, human as well as the environment. So where are you, what you looking at?
This is toward the end of the first part of the book. Matt, the main character, has decided that that this girl that he's been spending time with as he grew up is really his chance to get out of what seems like a dead end of his life. I think he realizes he's emotionally at a dead end, and he needs something to go differently.
And I want to mention that Matt, it was his, not just his brother, but his twin brother who
mm-hmm.
died.
Yeah.
And that's another very powerful.
Yeah, twins are connected in, you know, ways that are just remarkable. I'm a high school teacher, and so I started noticing that with my students, with my students who were twins, that it was a strange sort of telekinesis almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's.
This is Matt doesn't really know how to go about courting a girl, and he's very withdrawn, and so he decides to approach it by first watching her, and this is him beginning to watch her, and later on he's going to give her a series of anonymous gifts, but this starts with him watching her at the north end of a town called Peach. At the north end of Peach, a towering knoll rose out of an otherwise level alfalfa pasture belonging to the grocer. Wendy and her sisters swathed the field summers to fodder the delivery nags. The grocer drove twice weekly to service the invalids and bachelors who quit on town for one reason or another. Straw and dirt had accumulated under the rocky promontory until it looked a part of the country. But Mrs. Jefferson, his teacher, had told the class a volcano near the ocean had spewed across the state. February, when the Chinooks began to loosen winter, Matt ended a horse ride at the place. He tethered his mare to the spindly locust behind and hiked to the crest. There he tucked himself behind the sharp-edged rock. He let his mind unspool once more that evening, waiting for truce he suddenly felt he required. Swimming below him was the town all light and motion. Horse hooves splashed the damp streets, and children darted in and out of the house glows like birds in the dawn. Full dark, he heard a mother call and then another. An hour passed, the light slipped out. A couple spooning on the porch split the quiet with laughter, but the night stitched it over like something he'd dreamt. From his knoll, he saw the pendulum of Wendy's arm, the pendulum Wendy's arm made when she swept the broom or the rock of her legs crossing one another while she read. He became almost giddy with her, and when the light of her window turned the lawn lemony and warm-looking after all the other lights had been blown dark, he crept to the edge of her window's glow on the lawn and put one hand inside it, then one leg, and studied himself lit. Finally, he dared to get his whole body aglow and felt weightless and bold, like he might just walk to the door and knock. Then he heard a chair shift inside and dove into the well of a raspberry thicket.
I love that. I love that. You know, at first I thought he was actually climbing into the space, and then I realized he was stepping into the light.
Yeah.
You've got so many of these literal and metaphorical things going on at the same time. And I liked also how the night stitched it over. There's just so much richness here. This book is not for... What grades do you teach?
I teach high school, usually sophomores.
Could they read this book? Because I think everyone, especially here in this part of in the Northwest, should read this book or would love reading this book. But I wondered kind of how, because Matt's only 14, but 14 going on, whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's like any other book that's about, that contains adult themes. There's no reason why they can't read it. But there's also no reason why they should have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I do when kids talk about reading my work is talk to them about it and tell them, you know, what to look out for and tell them to, and ask them if they've got questions and we'll have conversations about it.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah.
But, yeah, I think kids get my stuff pretty well.
Yeah. Well, it's it's definitely coming of age, but the physical and the emotional and the spiritual here in this one young man are at very different paces.
Mm-hmm. I think that's because his development gets disoriented by not just the death of his father and his twin brother, but also the strange sort of sexual encounter he has with the teacher, that he's the order in which things are supposed to happen to a young man has suddenly, been disrupted.
Yeah.
And it takes him most of his life to reorganize it.
Well, I was going to say, as I was finishing the book, I was in tears. I was so moved by, it was beautiful.
Thank you very much.
I highly recommend, the book is called The Hour of Lead, a novel. I would say an historical environmental, was there really that big snowstorm in 1918?
No.
Okay.
No, not that I know of anyway. Okay. I actually, what inspired me to write that snowstorm is a story by Ron Hansen called Wickedness. And I'd read the story, and it's about a snowstorm. And, it was maybe 6 months later that I started working on this book, and it just sort of, the snowstorm just sort of occurred. I can tell where that came from. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful book. It's a powerful book, and it's a way to learn about life. in past times, in today's times, and also in the area that we live in. Good for anyone. Bruce Holbert is my guest and the writer. And if you happen to live in our area and you're not listening in New York or Nova Scotia, then you can actually hear Bruce this evening at 7 p.m. at Beach Books in Seaside, a wonderful bookstore. And he was reading in Portland yesterday. That's how we got lucky to have him here. But tonight he'll be at Seaside. And then you go back to Eastern Oregon? Is that where you
Eastern Washington.
From? Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I still teach high school, so
yeah.
I've got to go back to work.
Oh, that's right. We're in session, aren't we? Yeah. And how long have you been doing that?
31 years.
Holy moly. Oh, I guess you're older than you look.
I feel older than
well.
I look, I hope.
And your academic work was in creative writing, English, etc.
I wouldn't call my undergraduate work academic. It was barely academic.
Oh.
But I went to graduate school at the University of Iowa Writers Workshop, and that's really when I think I sort of found myself as a thinker and a writer.
Well, did you publish anything before Lonesome Animals?
No books. I published several stories and some essays and things like that.
Interesting. So now at this time in your life, the big stories are coming together for you?
Well,
or do you think there'll be another?
Oh, yeah, I mean I'm working as good. Much or more than I ever have. I think that part of it is timing. You know, it took me a long time to get the business end of things straightened out. It took me 20 years to get an agent, and once I got an agent, it took her 6 weeks to sell the book.
Oh, so, wow, there's a lesson for
folks
out there.
Well, it tells you how important agents are.
Yeah.
And
a good agent.
Yeah, and so some of it's timing, and some of it is me maturing as a writer and a person, and some of it was I was not willing to give up being a husband or a father or, you know, teaching seriously either. So,
do you have a discipline for writing when you're doing something?
Not really. My, you know, as my family was growing up, I sort of learned to write when there was time. And I also learned that if I was waiting for the right time, I would
never happen.
You know, I would wait until old age,
right.
Because there was so much going on. And I didn't want to miss what was going on, and I didn't want to curtail what was going on. So I learned to write in the gaps between.
Well, apropos of what you just said, from this book, it's clear that you are devoted to family and to animals as well. You have a special, but you're, you've got, it's very powerful. I don't want to give much more away except to say that I highly recommend, let's see, I'm looking to see 307 pages, and it, I wouldn't miss a page. That's the thing. It just really is wonderful. So tonight, Seaside Books. And do you have a website or an email?
Yeah.
Or something? What's
yeah,
that?
Yeah, my website is BruceHolbertBooks.com.
Okay.
And people can get a hold of me through Facebook. And my page is public. So I have a Facebook Books page, and then I have a personal Facebook page too. And I'm happy to have conversations with people about that. One of the really nice things about going around and talking to people about books is that you have the opportunity to talk to folks and answer some of their questions, but more just appreciate their interest in just the world. I mean, that readers are curious and you know, there's not enough curiosity in the world, I don't think.
Amen to that. And it's feels really good to have this hardcover book in my hand to open page by page. I'm not much reading online. So, again, The Hour of Lead, a novel by my guest, Bruce Holbert. If it's not in your independent bookstore, then ask for it and they can find it, I'm sure. Or just go to BruceHolbertBooks.com and check in with him. As you can see, a very accessible person. I think your students are very fortunate to have you as a teacher. And thanks for coming in, Bruce.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
You bet. And we'll see you whenever next time is.
Yeah, well, I hope it's as beautiful next time as it is today. This is gorgeous.
Yeah, well, I hope you get time to spend a good time in the town. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Carol.
And this is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. I have some music from the Cedar Shakes, and they have a couple of gigs. I knew about the last, the one that's coming up in October, but I just found out that tomorrow evening there's going to be a big celebration called Revive a Great Notion. You Oregonians or Northwesterners can tell where that's coming from. Obviously, Ken Kesey. It's the 50th anniversary of Sometimes a Great Notion, and it's also the 25th anniversary of Jupiter Books right here in Cannon Beach. So from 5 to 8 tomorrow evening at 244 North Spruce, there will be a big celebration, dramatic readings. Of course, Matt Love will be there. He's totally ensconced in Sometimes a Great Notion in his own way. And congratulations to Watt Childress, who is the present owner, of course, our beloved Billy Hultz, and there's going to be the original person from the bookstore there as well, dramatic readings, all kinds of good things. And the Cedar Shakes are going to be playing. And here's another thing. The Upper Left Edge, which is now online, will be they'll making a special print copy. We missed that. So have a listen and do stay tuned. Help me forget. Help me remember.
song laced with heartache feels like drowning in a dream. I ain't been lied to with such pretty words since Nashville, Tennessee. She picks me up along.
Oh, yeah. That's the Cedar Shakes. They're from right here in Nehalem. We've got a lot of fantastic local musicians. Yes, you'll see why that's a segue coming up. But in the meantime, Cedar Shakes, again, they are going to be playing in October the 25th at the Sou'wester Lodge in Seaview. But in the meantime, they are playing this Saturday night at the in Cannon Beach at Jupiter Books for the big 25th anniversary celebration. Yeah. So let me tell you, speaking of all the good music we have lots of good arts and culture, as you know if you listen to this show. And one of the things that helps the arts and culture be so alive and vibrant is support from the community. So Charlene Larson is here right now in the studio, and she wears many hats. As a matter of fact, I bump into her all over the place. But today she's here to talk to us about the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Do you use the word county in there, or is it just Clatsop Cultural Coalition?
Mostly we call Clatsop Cultural Coalition.
Okay. So yeah. It's three C's instead of four C's, but right. There's so many three C's around here, I thought we better stick that fourth one in. So this is also related to the Oregon Cultural Trust, and how you can apply for a grant locally so that you can it can help your organization or you as an artist or your school or whatever. So welcome, Charlene.
Thank you.
So tell us.
Well, the 2014 grant cycle for the Clatsop Cultural Coalition is underway, and each year approximately $8,000 is made available by the Oregon Cultural Trust to Clatsop Cultural Coalition to fund projects in arts, music, humanities, and heritage. So groups and individuals can go online to the Clatsop Cultural Coalition's website and download this year's application form and learn about the goals and the work of the coalition.
Now, I understand that, if I'm correct, that this year's application is different from that of past years?
Yes, it is. And that's important for folks to know, is don't use something that you have used in the past, but do go to the website and download the new application. And there will also be two important opportunities to get coaching on the preparation of the application and to ask questions. So one is this coming Tuesday, September 23rd, from 6 to 7 p.m. in Columbia Hall, 219, at Clatsop Community College, and that's at 1651 Lexington Avenue in Astoria. And then again on Saturday, September 27th, from 10 to 11 a.m., at the Clatsop Community College South County Campus at 1455 North Roosevelt Drive in Seaside. This bit of coaching and these two opportunities are real important because you can get all your questions answered, go over the application, and feel real secure in going in and then filling out the application and making your submission. So again, it's for arts, music, humanity, and heritage. The funding in the past has funded school music programs, theater performances, dance instruction, ballet costumes, musical instruments, speakers, and even paint for a historic community building, among others.
So it's probably worthwhile if someone has a thought and isn't sure whether it fits in to check it out. Now, not everybody can make the workshops. Is there something online that would help folks to, you know, I've got a project. I wonder if this fits in the parameters.
Right.
Is there someone I can either ask or...
Go to the Coalition's website and take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have questions about the process, mm-hmm. you can also contact Janet Bowler, mm-hmm. and she can help in that regard. And that's JL Bowler, Bowler, at charter.net. Or look at the website, www.clatsopculturalcoalition.org. Now, the applications will be accepted between September 15th and November 1st.
Okay, so we're already into it. So it's up until November 1st.
Right.
And they are strict about this, folks, so don't wait till the last minute.
Right. Completed applications must be received no later than 5 p.m. November 1st. And our post office box is 864 Astoria, Oregon, 97103. So if you're going to mail it, allow enough time to mail that application that it is received by November 1st.
Is there a way to apply electronically?
Not at this time.
Okay, so do have to mail it.
You do have to mail it.
Or if there's
or
someone...
Or deliver it.
Deliver it to someone who's on the coalition.
Right.
So do you have to be a nonprofit group? A lot of people ask this.
You do not. You do not need to be a nonprofit group or individual. And so individuals may apply with a project. Groups may apply. And they're... In this whole application process, it is a competitive process.
Mm-hmm.
So in last year, I believe we had about total of $21,000 in grant applications asking for help.
Right, right.
But we had $8,000 to give out.
Right.
So kind of keep that in mind,
right.
too. There is a limit, top end of $2,000 an organization individual.
This, if someone, again, just giving people, so, because this is the kind of stuff you'll learn at the workshop, I'm sure, but if someone needs, even if they need $2,000, they are very far from being guaranteed of getting the full $2,000. Does it help if they can show that they are also bringing in either money or in-kind donations to support this, perhaps putting on a concert or doing an arts residency or whatever it is?
That helps because the budget has both the monetary income and outgo, but also the in-kind.
It does. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we take that into consideration. And also one of the questions is there, if you did not receive this grant,
mm-hmm.
could you proceed?
Right.
You know, what is plan B?
Right.
Or plan C?
Right. Well, I can imagine some people would say, well, I better not give them that because then they'll say, well, then you don't need the money. But in fact, maybe what you're looking for is creative thinking.
Correct.
To see.
And a sense of, is the project going to move forward?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know if maybe as an example of of some of the projects in this past year, we have on December 9th this year, 2014, we will have an awards ceremony and award the checks for the successful applicants. And it's always nice to have a party.
Absolutely.
When you award something. But just an idea, some of the award winners in 2013 were the Cannon Beach Arts Association for their Under 18 show.
Uh-huh.
They had a wonderful show of students.
Yeah.
and wonderful artwork. Rain Magazine this year, Neighbors and Neighborhoods. If you didn't get a chance to look at that edition of Rain Magazine, it is wonderful.
Both of those always are excellent, but I just want to mention that this year's Rain Magazine cover art was by Royal Nebaker. So that's very special, too.
And then we awarded the Trails End Schoolhouse Restoration for a ramp and handrails so you could safely get in and out of the building.
Right.
So that's a little different from actually doing a performance.
Yep.
But it
enables the arts to go forward.
Right. And to Tillicum Foundation.
That's us.
Yeah. For the De La Independence celebration that was just held in Seaside at the Bob Chisholm Center.
Right. That would have been the
Lower Columbia Hispanic Council.
Exactly.
And Tillicum Foundation partnering together.
Right. So that's another interesting idea, is that partnering is a good thing.
Is a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then Liberty Theater's Body Vox masterclass for local students.
Nice.
So when Body Vox comes, then there'll be a masterclass. And then the Toll of Anna Arts Association, Get Lit at the Beach.
Oh, and I was there. It was fabulous. Yeah. I want to just quickly mention that the money, and Charlene, you correct me. I'll just give an outline if you have anything to add. The money for the Clatsop Cultural Coalition, this $8,000 that's given out, comes from the Oregon Cultural Trust. And what that's about is you and I make contributions to nonprofit organizations like the Tillicum Foundation, like the gallery, the Cannon Beach Arts Association. And then we can match them. And there's a whole list, a very long list of organizations. And then you can match that by giving the same amount to the state, to the Oregon Cultural Trust. And that match, that money that you give the Oregon Cultural Trust, is a deduction. It's a complete credit. You get the entire, you can donate up to $500. It's taken off your taxes. It's not a partial.
I think it's a tax credit.
A credit, not a deduction.
Right.
And it's a fantastic way to, if you pay taxes, to make sure that, you know, your taxes are covering the arts that you believe in. And then the Oregon Cultural Trust divides the money they get among all the counties which participate. And so Clatsop County gets back $8,000 or thereabouts. And then this excellent volunteer Clatsop Cultural Coalition, people like Charlene and Janet and others, are the ones who have to do all the work of making the decisions. So let's repeat. The workshops are this Tuesday from 6 to 7 at the college at Columbia Hall, room 219, or Saturday the 27th from 10 to 11 in the morning at the Clatsop College South County, and that is 1455 North Roosevelt. Yeah, sounds good. It's a fantastic opportunity. For full disclosure, I have written a grant, and that's not my forte, but I got help. I got advice, just like you can, and I was able to get a grant. It's a partial grant, but it really makes things possible. So anything else we should tell folks, Charlene?
There are 1,300 eligible cultural nonprofits are partnered with the Oregon Cultural Trust.
Where is that list?
And that's on the Oregon Cultural Trust website. So if you want to know who to give your money to, you can go and look.
Or if you already give money to an organization like the North Oregon Coast Symphony or any of these nonprofits or any of these cultural places in our area, then check it out. And if it matches, go ahead and give to the Oregon Cultural Trust. If you're a taxpayer, it feels great to know that your money is going to the arts instead of to some of the things we may not. This is state money, state tax, though. Okay. Thank you so much, Charlene. Thanks for being on the committee, and thanks for coming in and telling us about it.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. I have one more guest here, and that's a couple who's in town to be playing music tonight. I'm going to tell you what else is happening tonight, and then let you hear some music from them. The Astor Street Opry Company, Topsy Turvy, Shanghai at 7. Commander Cody and his Modern Day Airmen at the Liberty at 7 o'clock, opening with Jessica Lynn. Art at the Depot till 7 tonight, and Saturday 10 to 4, Northwest Artist Guild, that's 3rd and Pacific in Long Beach. The Voodoo Room has surf rock band, the Cures, the Lures, my writing, 9 o'clock. Patchy Sanders, they did a fabulous job on Albert's show this morning. Whew, what music. They're going to be back here in Astoria, but tonight they're going to be at the Adrift Hotel, which hosts wonderful artists. And Holiday Friends CD release at the Kala, 1017 Marine Drive in Astoria at 8. And Manzanita Market, 5 to 7, with Rhythm Method Music, Beach Books, Bruce Holbert. And my next guests, Carl and Marilyn, are at Bowie Beer, 7 to 9. Let's have a listen. Thanks for being here, folks.
All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you? Whoa, take my lips.
Taking your lips.
I want to lose them. Oh, take my arms.
Taking your arms.
I'll never, never, never use them.
Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry.
How can I get along, dear, without you?
You took the part that once was my heart, so why not take all of me?
Bidulia-po-da-de.
Yara-ba-ba-ra-ba.
Ba-bidulia-po-da.
Yara-ba-ba-ba.
Bidulia-ba-ba.
Thank you.
Well, you can tell from the music that this is going to be a treat. This is Carl Bernstein and Marilyn Priddy, known as Carl and Marilyn, from their CD Sailing Home, which is a 2012 release. And they are going to be playing tonight at Buoy Boy in Astoria, 7 to 9 p.m. So welcome to Coast Community Radio, KMUN.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having us here.
And you haven't been here before.
No.
Okay, we have two radio virgins. However, that's about it, I suspect. These guys are on the road much of the time playing their music, and I just asked them whether the whole album is in this genre, and they said, both of them at the same time, absolutely not. Tell us about your music, because this is wonderful.
We do everything from jazz to bluegrass to original music, which is also quite unusual. We do classical. Carl is trained as a classical guitarist.
Oh.
Marilyn has been singing her whole life, and I've been playing guitar my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we bring our various talents together, and we've both been professional musicians separately until about 3.5 years ago.
So you started playing together just 3.5 years ago?
Actually, about 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
But as a duo, about almost 4 years now.
Okay. Time flies.
It does.
Well, you sound so good together. This is beautiful.
It's thank you.
Very lyrical, and
we're working on a new CD, which we will probably record in the spring. So we're real excited about that. It's going to be even more eclectic.
Okay. So when you say you're on the road most of the time, does that mean you're like? I don't know what. I didn't look out and see what you're driving.
But. It's not most of the time. We are on the road. We live on the road.
Okay.
We sold our home
in
Las Vegas, New Mexico, and sold all our possessions. And we built the most beautiful motorhome you've ever seen.
Wow.
And it's all tailored to our needs of all of our instruments, and it's all green. And
is it here in Astoria?
It is.
So people might actually see this driving and wonder, aha, now we know who owns that.
Right,
What instruments do you play?
I play cello, and I also play keyboard, but I don't perform with the keyboard. I normally just write my songs on keyboard, as it gives me that stretch of chords and things to express.
And did you grow up making music? Have you been doing it all your life?
I have been musical all my life. I've been professional all my life. I've had breaks where I wasn't performing, but I've always been a musician.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Texas.
Yeah.
You heard that.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yes. Well, now I know why you're on the road. How about you, Carl?
Right.
I grew up in Detroit, and ended up going to university there and got a degree in music. But spent pretty much after that, I've been on the road living in various places. At one point, I spent 7 years in Latin America as a musician.
Oh,
playing all over Latin America.
So does that mean you are, do you speak Spanish then?
I speak fluent Spanish.
Oh,
yes.
Boy, we could have used you last night, you know. We have a group of ticos. These are folks from Costa Rica.
Uh-huh.
I want to give them a shout out. And a lot of us don't speak very good Spanish, so we've been struggling a bit, but they're terrific people. And they came in and did some radio with the wonderful Margarita Colimore, who comes from Mexico originally. So
wonderful.
That
so
was easy. She speaks Spanish.
Are they performing here?
No. They are here on, it's an exchange. It's kind of a citizen diplomacy. Every state in the union has a sister state or country in Latin America. And ours, Oregon's, is Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we got
wonderful
lucky.
Place. I've been in Costa Rica.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. But now your travels take you where? You say all over. What does that mean? You're on the West Coast
we've
now.
We've been traveling nonstop for the last 10 months, and we started, of course, in New Mexico, and I have family in Fort Worth, Texas, and we went there and saw my 97-year-old mom.
Mazel tov.
Hi, Mom.
And, wow.
And then we went down to the coast, the Gulf Coast, and spent some time on the beach down there, which is great. And then we spent most of the winter in Big Bend National Park.
Nice idea.
It's awesome down there. Right on the border of Mexico, we had a wonderful adventure. And then we cut across Arizona and then came up the coast of California.
So do you play in, you just find venues on your own?
We do.
Yes.
Look it up and you find a...
We try not to schedule anything ahead of time so that our when we come to a place and we like it, we just hang out for
lovely.
A little while.
Lovely.
So we've found gigs everywhere. We've done house concerts, which we love. We do breweries like tonight. Mm-hmm. And we do... street corners. We played here last Sunday at the market.
That was really fun.
So are you going to be staying in Astoria longer, or is this the end of your...
We're kind of at the end. Usually it takes 5 days a week to get something set up, and we explore the area. We were just at the...
Cape Disappointment.
Oh, Cape Disappointment Park
for Washington.
3 days.
And, lovely.
But we're back in town for a couple of days, and then...
We're going to go a little further into Washington, up to the National Park, the Olympic Park, and then probably turn around and head south. But we don't know where.
I love it. And, Carl, did you tell us what your instruments...
I'm a trained classical guitarist, but I play jazz, and I do a lot of composing, which is more in a popular feel. But my classical guitar playing for at least 50 years had been, and with other things, my main focus. I've had the opportunity to study with Andre Segovia and Julian Bream. And
oh, my.
I'm a pretty good classical guitarist.
I guess. But, that's great. So what are you going to play tonight at Bowie Beer? Somehow I'm not seeing classical guitar.
Oh, we will play a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit.
Oh, my.
We do some interesting classical pieces together that Carl's been doing for a long time.
And she's arranged parts for the cello. They're very beautiful, actually. Mm-hmm.
So that was the cello I was hearing. I thought it was, I heard you
bowing
the cello.
I play it like an upright bass.
Yes,
for
that's
jazz.
What I heard, I thought, until you said you played the cello. I went, that must have been
the low cello.
Right, the low part of the cello. Right. My last guest is a bass, upright bass player.
Oh,
the woman.
Okay.
So, again, this is Bowie Beer. Ooh, I don't have the address on them. I have been there, though. They're one of our new places. Do you know?
I think it's on 8th Street, right down by the water.
And the water. Yeah. So, B-U-O-Y, as in Bowie, Beer, and it's a great place.
And
very
food.
Interesting space. So that's 7 to 9 this evening for Carl and Marilyn. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks
and
for
I'm hoping
us.
You're going to let us keep this album.
We
so
are.
That's great because...
You enjoy that.
I look forward to playing some more on the radio.
Great.
For sure. And you'll stay in touch with us when your new album comes out.
Absolutely.
Maybe you'll even come back this way when the weather gets back like this again.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carl and Marilyn.
Thank you, Carol.
And that is tonight. And thanks to Bobby for making that connection. I'm going to put on a little bit of Holiday Friends because they're playing at, they're playing at Cala tonight. And also I want to tell you about tomorrow again the celebration at Jupiter Books. And Mary Lou McCauley, of course I remember, I know Mary Lou, was the original owner of Jupiter Books. I hadn't put that all together, so she will be there tomorrow night as well. A poetry workshop by Oregon Past Poet Laureate Paul Ann Peterson is at Tillamook Library, 11 to 4. This is all tomorrow. Lazy Boys, that's John and Larry, at the Coffee Girl, 39th and the River, from 5 to 8, plus an open mic. Apollo Archives in Nacelle at 11 with a film and subtitles. Lindsay Hill at the Pine Grove. Nutcracker Auditions, this is all Saturday. On Sunday, Jennifer Goodenberger will be on the air with Denise Reed at 7 a.m. Tune in. And Fort George has the Brownsmead Flats. And Seaside Brewing, 7:30 music with the local band Geezer Creek. And they are geezers also. Astoria Railroad Preservation Association open house. Monday, North Coast Symphonic Band is looking for musicians. And Tuesday, the workshop that for your grant that we talked about, the Astor Street Opry Teen Theater is starting 4 to 6 weekly. And Wednesday, Sou'Wester is offering the music of Shelley Short, Michael Hurley, yes, our Michael Hurley, and the Australian four-piece band Dick Diver. That's at 8 p.m. in Seaview, Washington. And on Thursday, Oysterville Schoolhouse with Patricia Moss, discovering history through art. Oh, boy, once again, we're over time. Sorry, folks, time to move on. KMUN Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook, CoastRadio.org, wherever you are in the world.